This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill from the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hidden Killers podcast.
Let's get back to the courtroom. It's day number one, and this is segment three in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill.
Did you ever reach out to law enforcement about your concerns about JJ?
Yes.
When did you do that?
My brother died on July 11th, and we found out about it July the 12th, and we were in Lake Charles, and he was deceased in Arizona in a Chandler, and we found out Friday afternoon, that was on the 12th, and then we talked to a detective then, and Larry and I flew out the next day to Phoenix so we could meet with the detective. And he met with us the next day, that Sunday afternoon, and our first question to the detective was, we are so worried about JJ, and also, did he see what happened to his dad?
So you spoke with law enforcement very soon after your brother's death?
Yes.
After you first spoke with law enforcement, you did have occasion to FaceTime with JJ, as you testified earlier, correct?
Yes.
After your last FaceTime with JJ on August 10th, did you ever speak with law enforcement again about JJ's well-being or his whereabouts?
Yes, numerous times.
Okay.
Your Honor, at this point, I'm going to renew my objection pursuant to Idaho Criminal Rule 16b-6. She's indicating that she met with law enforcement on numerous occasions. I've received some, but I don't think I've received all of those communications.
Response.
Your Honor, the defense has received multiple reports, and I think that those would indicate all of the witness's statements about her concerns about JJ.
All right. I've considered the record that I've got on the issue, and looking at the rule cited 16b-6, I'll overrule the objection.
Mrs. Woodcock, did you take any steps yourself to try and locate JJ?
Yes.
What did you do?
We hired a private investigator in October, because we had not heard from JJ since August 10th. We heard that Lori had left the state with JJ, and we had no idea where she was.
Okay.
Or he was.
Okay. I want to speak with you about November in 2019. Was JJ Vallow ever physically with you in November of 2019?
No.
You had testified earlier that you were helping your brother Charles with his business, correct?
Yes.
And you had access to multiple of his financial records?
Yes.
And other accounts?
Yes.
Okay. Did anything happen in November that alerted you to Lori Vallow's whereabouts?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall what date that happened?
November 8th.
Where were you?
At home, Lake Charles.
In Lake Charles, okay. How did you become aware of Lori Vallow's whereabouts?
I had a printer that was Charles's. When we cleaned out his house in Houston, one of his sons and my family went to pack it up to vacate the house, and nobody wanted the printer, so I said, okay, I'll take it home, and it sat on my table for a couple of months, and on November the 7th, I decided it was time to hook it up to my computer, and I was having trouble with the scanner, so I was quite aggravated with it, so I went to bed and left it alone to look at it with a fresh eye in the morning. And I woke up at 4:30 in the morning, and I just had to go. Something was telling me to go work on that scanner. And when I got to my computer, I noticed that if you have Gmail, there's a, when you log on, there's a whatever icon you want it to be in the top right of your screen. And I saw Charles's icon, his, for his Gmail in a, on my computer screen. So I don't know how it was there, but it was there. And so I clicked on it and it brought me to his Gmail to sign in.
And were you able to sign into that Gmail account?
Yes.
Did you have access to Charles's passwords?
Yes. He had three favorite passwords, and the first one I used worked.
And had he provided you those passwords?
Yes.
Okay. When you opened up that Gmail account, what did you see?
There was a bunch of emails, but one that stuck out specifically was an Amazon, like a delivery status, delivery of like an ordered status email.
Okay. Where was that delivery to?
It was to 575 Pioneer Road, apartment 175 in Rexburg, Idaho.
Do you recall the date of that delivery?
It was probably a couple of days before November 8th. I don't remember specifically.
Okay. But it was after July 11th, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that delivery, was that associated with a specific company?
It was with Amazon.
Okay. What did you do after you saw that notification?
I called Brandon Boudreaux was first, and then law enforcement, and I do believe I talked to our private investigator as well. I talked to numerous people that day regarding it because I was shocked at what I found.
Okay. Did you look further into that Amazon account?
Yes. I got into the browsing history in the Amazon account, and I saw that there was browsing for a beach wedding dress, a bathing suit, men's large size, I think it was large, white linen top and pants, and malachite wedding rings. And there were a couple other little odd and things, I believe, maybe flip-flops or something.
Was there a date associated with that browsing history that you saw?
Yes.
What date was that?
October 2nd.
Of what year?
2019.
Was there a reason that caught your attention?
Yes, because I had learned before that that Tammy Daybell had passed away on October the 19th, and this was her looking at wedding rings and wedding stuff.
I'm going to stop you there.
Sorry.
When you said she was looking at wedding rings, who did you believe was looking at wedding rings?
Lori.
Okay. And was there anything else about that browsing history that caused you concern or caught your attention?
Not thinking of anything else.
Okay.
No.
Did you become aware at any time that the Rexburg police were looking for JJ?
Yes.
Did you ever meet with the Rexburg police?
I met with them in January of 2020.
Okay. Did you ever go to Rexburg, Idaho?
Yes.
Prior to this situation, had you ever heard of Rexburg, Idaho?
Never.
Did you put out a reward in aid of the search for JJ?
Yes, at the advice of a FBI.
Okay. Did you ever do interviews?
I'm going to object to relevance on that last question. I'm going to ask that it be stricken for the record.
Well, the answer came before an objection was lodged, so it's not timely, so it's overruled.
Did you ever do interviews with news outlets to publicize the search for JJ?
Objection, relevancy.
What's the relevance, Mr. Wood?
Just to lay the foundation of what Mrs. Woodcock was doing, looking for a missing child, Your Honor.
The objection's overruled. You can answer.
When we went in January of 2020, the media had learned of the story of the kids missing, and we reached out. Every media outlet was all over this, and we talked to every outlet we could. We appeared on talk shows. We did everything we could to raise awareness for the kids missing.
Okay. Around this time, did you ever become aware if Lori Vallow had remarried?
I did, yes.
Do you know who she had married?
Yes.
Who was that?
Chad Daybell.
So you testified you went to Rexburg in January of 2020.
Yes.
Did you ever see JJ there?
No.
Were you ever informed that JJ and Tylee were found?
Yes.
When was that?
June 9, 2020.
Do you know where they were located?
Yes.
Where were they located?
In Chad Daybell's backyard, buried in shallow graves.
Okay. Your Honor, the state has no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wood. Let's make sure we've got all the exhibits that were admitted to the court clerk, and then Mr. Thomas, you can conduct your cross-examination.
How are you doing today?
Good.
So when JJ was born, this was your son, right? That he was born to?
Yes.
Okay. Your son couldn't take care of JJ due to personal issues, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then he came into your custody?
Yes.
And you were kind of like, you were a foster parent, right?
Caregiver? Yes.
Sort of like a foster parent, or I don't know how it works in Louisiana.
Temporary placement.
Okay. And generally, what my understanding is and what we do here in Idaho is we try to reunite with the parents. Is that what was going on with JJ?
Yes.
Okay. And you kept him, I believe you said, from July until about February. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And sometime between July and February, there was a conversation between you and your brother Charles, right?
Yes.
About the adoption or the possible adoption of JJ.
Yes.
And Charles is your older brother?
Yes.
He's about 5 years older than you?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me again why it is that you didn't want to adopt JJ.
We really wanted to adopt JJ, and we could have provided him a good home. But when speaking with Charles and Lori, they just had their atmosphere was a lot more conducive to a baby. He had issues, Kanan. I call him Kanan when we had him, and mm-hmm. JJ after, so if I use either, sure, that's the difference. So with Kanan, in Lake Charles, there were no special schools for children with disabilities, and that we knew that was going to be a concern at some point. Lori and Charles just seemed to have the right, Although Charles was 5 years older than me, Charles could run circles around a 25-year-old, okay? And because Lori was, I believe, 17 years younger than him. So the age in that aspect didn't matter. And my husband, Larry, at that time was 65. And we knew how much, you know, raising children, because he has four and I had two. And we knew that it was going to be a lot. And his brother, Larry's brother, was raising an autistic grandchild. And the atmosphere that we had to offer in ways of, you know, stimulating a kid, bringing them to the park or going out with their friends or him having friends over, just things like that. Lori and Charles seemed to have a better place. They were a better placement for him.
Right. Okay. And what you wanted was the best thing for Kanan or JJ, right?
That's what we thought, yes.
Okay. And you mentioned that Larry had a brother who was raising an autistic child. JJ or Kanan or JJ, they were also autistic, correct?
I don't think he was diagnosed at that time, but he did have disabilities.
Okay. But you learned later that JJ was diagnosed with autism?
Yes.
Okay. You talked a little bit on the with the prosecuting attorney, about you working with Charles when he had a split with Lori, right?
Yes.
And that happened, he filed for divorce in February of 2019. You remember that?
Yes.
And that's when you flew out to Chandler?
Yeah, it was before he filed, I believe, but it was right at that time.
Okay, all right. But he ended up pulling that back or quashing that suit, right?
Yes.
So they were going to get back together?
Charles was hoping, but Lori was nowhere around.
Okay. And that was in February?
Yes. He just couldn't go through with it at that time.
And at that time, Charles had taken JJ with him to Houston, right?
At the end of March, yes.
End of March?
Okay. Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. But Lori did pop back up like March 28th. We were in the middle of packing him to move. And she came walking in the house like she hadn't been gone. And she was yelling at Charles to, you know, why did you take JJ and what are you doing and why are you moving? And just, it was ridiculous. It was, anyway, yes.
Mm. And you recorded that conversation?
I did.
Yeah. And that was a private conversation between Lori and her husband at the time?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I was in the next room. Her friend Melanie Gibb was in the next room, and we could all hear it.
You were in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Right? And they were in another room?
They were right there in the dining room.
Okay. And so Charles ended up moving to Houston, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you said that Lake Charles wasn't a good place for the schools that JJ would need to be in, and so that it was decided that he was going to live in Houston because that was a better place for him.
Correct.
And you said that since Charles had to work a lot, you were going to go to Houston to watch JJ while Charles was off on business trips and whatnot?
Yes, or we would get him and bring him home too, just whatever worked best for us.
Okay. And how far was it from Houston to, or not Houston, Katy, Texas, right? That's where they lived?
Yeah, 150 miles.
150 miles?
Yeah.
If Google says that it took about 6 hours, would that To drive it, would that make any sense to you?
No.
No? How long did it take to drive it?
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's to go from Lake Charles all the way through Houston and to the other side where Katie was?
Katie. When 150 miles, Houston is about 80 miles around. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And so 150 miles was like to a major airport or... In the general vicinity, yes, Katy may have been another 10 or 20 miles, but regardless, 2.5 hours, depending on what time of day you went.
So when you drove it, it took you about 2.5 hours to drive it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. And you indicated that, that the state asked you, or Mr. Wood asked you, about when you became, why you became concerned about the whereabouts of JJ, and you said because Lori didn't want him anymore. Is that right? Did you remember
yes.
saying that?
Yes.
Okay. And what led you to believe that Lori did not want JJ anymore?
Because when a mother leaves their child, she left her husband and she left her child for 58 days, and I know it was 58 days because Charles counted every day and would tell me every day. She never reached out to JJ. She didn't reach out to Charles. And
were you with them the entire 58 days?
I was with them a lot of the 58 days. Out of 58 days, I probably was with them well over a month.
So more than 30 days?
Yes.
And during those 30 days, you didn't hear from Lori?
No.
Okay, but you're not aware of times that she may have called and talked to Charles or JJ between that time that you weren't there. You don't have any specific knowledge, right?
Not that he told me, no.
Okay.
May I say something?
No, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I just
Mr. Wood will be able to
okay.
redirect you. Something interesting, on November the 8th, you indicate that you had packed up Charles's house previously and nobody wanted the printer, and so you took the printer back to your house. You recall that?
Yes.
And then you said that you were having trouble with the scanner portion of it, and so you just went to bed.
Yes.
And then you woke up at 4:30 in the morning, and... What was that like? Tell me a little bit about that. Was that a, what kind of an experience was that?
It was weird because I never woke up at 4:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to wake up at 4:30 in the morning with that scanner on my mind and having to get that was really weird because I never worried about anything that much. But it was bothering me, I guess. So I think it was divine intervention because of what I found when I logged on, when I got everything hooked up and...
Sure. What do you mean by divine intervention? What do you mean?
Just God's hand.
Thank you. No further questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Wood, do you have any redirect of the witness?
The state has no further questions, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. That'll conclude your testimony.
Thank you.
You may go ahead and return down to your seat there in the gallery. We'll give you a moment to do that, and then I'll ask the state if they've got another witness. All right, Mr. Wood, the state can call its next witness.
Your Honor, the state calls Brandon Boudreaux.
And who will be conducting direct examination?
I will, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Smith.
You solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you God.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Boudreau. If you'll come around this way and be seated in the seat to my left. All right, just a few quick instructions. We're making a record of the case, so please make verbal responses to any questions. Say yes or no instead of shaking your head, for example. Please try to avoid talking at the same time anyone is questioning you. And with that in mind, Ms. Smith, you can inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. Can you introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the grand jury, please?
Yeah, my name's Brandon Boudreau. I'm from Mesa, Arizona.
Okay. Sir, could you spell your last name, please?
B-O-U-D-R-E-A-U-X.
Okay. Mr. Boudreau, are you married?
I am.
How many times have you been married?
Twice.
Okay. Let's...
Can I have you scoot up to the microphone?
Sure. Sorry.
Okay. And I think it'll help if you just lean just a little forward. It might be a little uncomfortable, but lots of people need to hear.
Okay.
All right. And you said you'd been married twice. Let's talk about your first marriage. Who were you married to?
Melanie Cope at the time she became Boudreau.
Okay. And with your marriage to Melanie Boudreau, did you have any children?
I did.
How many?
Four.
Okay. And what are their ages?
I have Braxton, who is 13. Brighton, who's 9, Blake, who's 7, and Breeze, who just turned 6.
Okay. How long were you married to Melanie?
A little over 10 years.
Okay. What year did you marry?
2008.
Okay. During that time, did you meet her family?
I did, yes.
Okay. Can you tell us who you remember or who you had relations with?
I mean, she has a big family, so her mom passed away when she was young, so I met her birth mom's family, her dad's family, and then her stepmom's family.
When you say her birth mom's family, what are their names?
The Coxes.
Okay. And if you could just scooch just a little closer. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry.
I know. It's all right. And so the Coxes, what are their names, please?
Barry and Janice Cox are her, would that be her grandparents? And then Adam Cox, Summer Shiflett, Lori Ballow, and Alex Cox.
Okay, and those four people are who to Melanie and therefore were to you?
They would be her aunts and uncles.
Okay, therefore your aunts and uncles in-laws.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you spend much time with Lori's aunts and uncles? I mean, Melanie's aunts and uncles?
Yes. Before we got married, I met them in Arizona. We would spend, most holidays together. We would, When I first, right after I was married, I moved down to Arizona. I actually lived with Lori for a while and her husband, Charles.
Okay. So when you say Lori, do you see the person you recognize and knew through marriage as Lori Vallow here in the courtroom today?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Can you please point her out and describe an item of her clothing?
She's sitting over on my right with glasses on.
Okay. Your Honor, may the... what table, just so that the record's real clear?
The second table.
Okay. How many people are at it?
There's 3.
Okay. Your Honor, may the record reflect he's identified the defendant, please?
Yes, that's reflected now on the record.
Thank you. Now, you said you'd spent time in Ms. Vallow's home with Charles, correct?
Yes.
All right. And at that time, was he her husband?
Yes.
All right. How well did you get to know them?
Very well. You know, we just spent a lot of time together.
Okay. When you say we, what does that mean?
Me and my family. My wife at the time and my children.
Okay. Did you get to know her children, Ms. Vallow's children?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. What were their names?
There's Colby, Ty Lee, and JJ.
When you say you got to know them, did your kids also interact with their cousins?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we did. They spent a lot of time together. My oldest, Braxton, was pretty close with JJ. I think JJ looked up to him a lot, and they spent a lot of time together.
Okay. So would they spend any time in each other's homes?
Yeah. JJ wasn't. He wasn't super interactive as he had autism, so he wasn't always like incredibly interactive, but he seemed to love hanging out with my kids, and specifically Braxton and Brighton. As he got older, he started to be able to interact a little more, and he would always, he kind of had two fascinations. One was with traveling. He always said everybody always got him suitcases. He had suitcases everywhere. And the other was coming and hanging out with Braxton. He would always ask for that, and they had a great time when they spent time together.
Okay. And what about Ty Lee?
I spent a lot of time with Ty Lee as well. I watched her grow up. I met her when she was just little, and then got to watch her kind of grow into a teenager.
Did you have any special sort of religious connection to Ty Lee?
Yeah. In our church, when you turn eight, you can get baptized if you choose. And so when she turned eight, she decided to get baptized. And for whatever reason, Charles wasn't comfortable doing the baptism. And so they had asked me, and I of course, said yes. I would be honored to baptize her.
And you say in your church, what church is that? What's your faith?
I go to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay. And was Ty Lee baptized into that church?
She was, yes.
Okay. Were you and your wife members of the Church of Latter-day Saints?
Yeah, we were.
Okay. And to your knowledge, what about Mr. and Mrs. Vallow?
Yes, as well.
Okay. What about the relationship sort of that you observed between Melanie Boudreaux and, Lori Vallow? What was that like?
Yeah. Melanie, she kind of had like an affinity towards, Lori. She always kind of, she looked at her kind of less like an aunt figure and almost more like a mom figure. She was always wanting to be like her.
Did you get along with Charles?
Yeah, really well. Charles and I both had a passion for sales and in business, and we connected well in that. And we just both loved our families, and so it was very easy for us to spend time together.
So it wasn't uncommon that the Boudreaux and the Vallows would get together and get along?
Yeah, we would. There was years where they lived by us, and we would usually see each other maybe once a month or more. And then there was times when they lived further away, but we would travel to each other's homes, stay in each other's homes when we went, and it wasn't uncommon to spend a week, or more at each other's homes.
Did you spend holidays together?
Yes.
Okay. What was the last Christmas that the Boudreaux and the Vallow spent together?
That would have been in 2018.
Okay. Was that a typical Christmas? For the two couples?
No, it was definitely different at that point.
Why?
When you get really close with people, you kind of become comfortable and you let your guard down, and you, you know, your body language is more relaxed and more comfortable, and it just, everything kind of, I don't know how to, you know, it can be so fluid. You can see each other and pick right up where you left off. But everybody feels like they know everything about each other, almost like it's just, you know, you're so, you know each other so well that it's like memory, if you will. But, and that one, it was very, well, there was Melanie Gibb, who was there, who I'd never met before, and never heard anything about,
So let me stop you there and let me ask. So you said it wasn't the same as before. Were there other people there for this holiday?
Melanie Gibb was there with her family, who I didn't really know her, and the rest of us were all, it just didn't feel, we didn't feel close. The body language was very, in the way that the conversations flowed and everything just felt very distant.
Now, around this time, were you and your wife active in your church or in your ward?
Yeah.
Okay. Had you been active with the Vallos in your faith?
Could you maybe expand on that?
Sure. Had you and the Vallos shared that faith and shared activities at church?
We definitely had done things at church together.
Okay. And did your wife's and or Mrs. the, let's take it one at a time. Did your wife's activity in religious events increase around this time, around that Christmas?
Yeah, a little bit before it actually, but
can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So when we first got married, my wife's kind of religious level was kind of low. She didn't enjoy going to church. It wasn't something that she, it was more me pushing going to church. I felt like I got like a little bit of a benefit from it, and she didn't really enjoy it that much. And so for most of our marriage, it was kind of me pushing going to church. But kind of in the fall of that year.
And we're talking 2018.
Yeah, sorry. In the fall of 2018, she started getting really passionate about going to church and about different ideas within the church. She started going to these things she was calling firesides.
When you say calling firesides, are firesides within the LDS faith, are those a common practice?
So in the LDS faith, the way our setup is organized is our congregation's called a ward, and there's usually some leaders inside the ward. And then there's a bigger congregation called a stake. And inside of that, usually ecclesiastical leaders organize the regular Sunday events, but you also occasionally will have like, they call them firesides, but like a special event that focuses on something around our belief. And in this case...
Were the events that your wife attending called firesides sort of part of the organized part of your church?
No, and that's, I guess, what started kind of sticking out to me was she would go to these things that she was calling firesides, but they weren't put on by the church. They didn't have any ecclesiastical connection. Like, there wasn't anything like that, but they were using that term. She was coming home with kind of different ideas of what she was going to do to be a faithful member of the church.
Okay. Was the defendant at some of these firesides?
Yes.
Okay. Did Charles go to any of these fireside talks?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And were you invited?
No, I had a discussion with Melanie, and she told me that these were her thing, and she didn't want me to go, and it was very clear that I wasn't welcome to come.
To your memory, who was attending some of these, you know, extra church activities?
Besides Melanie and Lori. So
besides Melanie and Lori.
Your Honor, I'm going to object. It sounds like he doesn't have information as to who was there. Any information that he would have gotten would have been hearsay.
I'll sustain that. I think there's an adequate foundation.
Were you aware of who attended some of these events?
Not in the present, but afterwards, yes.
Okay. Did any of the people who later went to those told you they had attended those?
Yeah, I had a conversation with Melanie Gibb later where she told me she went to those.
Okay.
Again, it's hearsay.
And that will be stricken as hearsay, the okay. statement of what another said.
All right. But you weren't allowed to go to these talks?
Correct.
All right. And when you say some of the ideas your wife came back with, did they center around particular topics?
Yeah, the things that were, she felt a need, to go to the temple every single day, which, is a little bit extreme. And like in our faith, we believe in going to the temple, and I think regular attendance can be good. It's something where you go and kind of, practice ritualistically, like, your faith and show God that you are trying to keep promises to Him. And so it's a good thing to do, but
Is it unusual to go every single day?
Very, and it got even more extreme. Like, she would have to go during, like, our family trips to Disneyland or things like that that just were very, very overwhelming. She had to focus on this idea that, like, the world could end soon and we had a disagreement about buying $10,000 worth of food storage right away. Things that just seemed, extreme.
Okay. And so in this situation, you've been to Christmas and your wife is participating in these extra religious events. Did that affect the situation between sort of the Boudreaux and the Vallos going into 2019?
I guess it got a little bit harder for us.
Why?
Excuse me.
Do you need some water?
Yeah, actually.
Do you mind, Your Honor, if he takes a second?
Not at all. It's there for the witness.
Thanks.
Can you ask me that question again?
In going into 2019, did the situation between the Boudreaux and the Vallos, was it affected by this religious activity or the sort of atmosphere at Christmas?
It just kind of got more bizarre. Into 2019, in January, we got a call and text messages from Lori and Charles that Lori was accusing him of cheating and infidelity.
Okay. How did you respond to that situation?
It was kind of complicated.
Why?
For me, well, because initially when all of this started happening, you know, I wasn't really, like, I wasn't even aware of it that the night that it happened. When I became aware of it, it just seemed odd. You know, there was, it seemed kind of like it just went from 0 to 100 really quick. Like, Lori had removed all the money from their account. She had,
So let me stop you there and break it up. So did that affect the situation with your family?
Yeah, it did. My wife was very adamant that we weren't going to take sides.
And did you respect Melanie's wishes on that?
Yeah, I did my best, yes.
Okay. And did there come a time during this period that you would see Lori in the late winter, early spring of 2019?
I didn't see Lori very much at all, but I did see Charles.
Okay. So, how often would you see Charles?
He would bring JJ over to play a couple times. He had JJ. Lori wasn't, with JJ at the time. She, I don't know where she went actually.
So Charles would come over to your house with JJ?
Yeah. And,
and so what would JJ do at the house?
He would play with Braxton and just kind of get a release. JJ was always, very high energy. He had to like lock everything up when he came so that he couldn't get out of the house or get himself into trouble. So it'd be kind of thorough. It was like having a really big, kid that doesn't know how to like, you know, make certain decisions yet. It was a lot of work when he'd come over, but you know, you just loved him. So you did it. But, so Braxton kind of always knew that his duty was to play with JJ and entertain him and keep him kind of busy so that, he would get into less, you know, trouble or get into less things.
Got it. And so did you spend time with Charles when JJ was there?
I did, yeah.
Okay. Let's fast forward to that summer. Did you have occasion to go to a family trip or visit your wife's family in Utah?
Yeah, I did. After meeting with Charles those couple times and kind of seeing him go through some painful process, I promised Melanie, I kept asking him not to come over and, you know, doing my best to help him, but trying to create distance. And so we actually, that summer went out and went to Utah to my wife's sister was going to get married, and we were staying at my in-laws' house.
Okay. Did anything unusual happen at your in-laws' house?
This was in June, to explain it, you know, on June 23rd, my grandfather, passed away of a heart attack. And, I got a little bit, his health wasn't great, but it was still a surprise. And so, on the 25th, my mom called me to tell me about the funeral. And I had this conversation with Melanie where I told her when it was, and she told me she wasn't going to go to the funeral. She didn't want anything to do with it. And it created kind of
a disagreement between you two.
Yeah, a disagreement. And in that process, this, what I thought we were arguing about with like her not wanting to go to my grandpa's funeral, not wanting my kids to go, kind of escalated into something completely different. It just kind of cascaded into a bunch of stuff that didn't make any sense and had nothing to do with me or her. Okay. To do with this.
All right. And when you say to do with this, did it lead to some accusations against you?
After I took a little break after I felt so emotional about my grandpa. I walked for a while. I came back and I really wanted to break through and have like a honest conversation with her. So I just came and apologized for my feelings and just told her that I would accept her not going to my grandpa's funeral. And I just begged her to talk to me about what was going on and why things were so hard. And she said that if I was honest, then we could work through things. And she said God had revealed some things to her. And so I just said, let's talk about him. Like, what is it? What's between us? And she started out by accusing me of hacking her Aunt Lori's computer.
Had you hacked her Aunt Lori's computer?
No, okay. I don't know anything about hacking. And, that was not something I did. It was really illogical, which stuck out to me and frustrated me because I didn't know why it had anything to do with what we were fighting about.
How did that conversation end?
It escalated some more hours, and then I kept trying to talk through it with her. Eventually, her father got involved, and we talked to him. And I tried to. She wouldn't talk to him with me, but I talked to him, and she was saying she didn't feel safe with me at the house, and she accused me of. Being a homosexual, which is another thing that didn't make any sense, but Charles had been telling me previously she was going to say,
okay.
Lori was going to convince her.
Okay, so she made those various accusations. How did it end?
It ended with her going to sleep and me feeling kind of overwhelmed. And finally, I texted Charles and Lori that I was frustrated with them, that I felt like this was on them. And
did you ever hear back from the defendant?
Lori never answered or responded. Charles talked to me.
Did you, without getting into what somebody told you, what day was this?
June 25th and in past midnight, so into the 26th.
Okay. Did you have additional, and it's 26th of June, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have additional conversations with Charles in the following few days?
I did. I talked to him again after I kind of worked through some stuff with my dad and my ecclesiastical leader, and I went to a counseling session. I called him. Oh, sorry. With my dad, with my ecclesiastical leader, our bishop is what we call him, and then I went to a counseling session, just feeling a little overwhelmed, and then I called Charles that night and talked to him. That was the last time I talked to him, and just I felt kind of maybe like he was the only person who knew what I was going through, because he'd gone through all these things earlier, and just told him I was sorry for not being there.
Because you'd kept your distance at your wife's request.
Yeah.
Okay. You said that's the last time you talked to him. You didn't talk to him again before he died?
No.
Okay. After Charles died, did you have contact with the defendant, Lori Vallow?
No.
Okay. After Charles died, did you have contact with JJ and Tylee?
No.
Okay. How did it progress for you in your relationship with your wife? Did you eventually reconcile, or did you divorce?
No, we ended up divorcing.
Okay. When did you divorce?
We did a mediated divorce, so we started the process after I got back from my grandpa's funeral. She left. She just took our car home, so I took my kids and flew home. And when I got home, she let me know that we had to do a mediated divorce. We had to do a divorce, and so that would have been in July. I started going through the process. We met. I found a mediator after consulting some people and hearing that that would be the lowest conflict way to divorce. I tried to follow through with that, so we went through that process, and that started. I can't say exactly which day, but probably around the 1st of July.
Okay. Did you continue working on the divorce and separation through that summer and fall?
I did, yes.
Okay. And where were you living in the end of September and beginning of October of 2019?
At the end of September, I was selling my house, my home that we had bought together. I had moved Melanie to a rental property. As soon as I sold my house, I got a rental property as well for the time being, just to try to create some stability. I rented a property right back in where my old ward was, where I had lived before.
Okay. And so how did that situation work out? Were you able to share custody?
It was complicated. She was just so standoffish, so it was really hard for me to, like, when I was showing the house, we had agreed that I would go see my kids and that I could put them to bed each night, but she wouldn't actually let me in her home. She said she was scared of me. And so I didn't get a lot of time with my kids up until I sold my house, at which time I got my house ready really fast, my new home, so I could have my kids in there. And
did there something occur at the beginning of October of 2019 that affected that situation?
Yeah.
What? What?
October 2nd, someone parked in front of my house and shot at me.
Okay. What had you done that morning?
Your Honor, I'm going to object to relevancy. I don't know what this has to do with the case at hand.
May we approach?
Quick sidebar with counsel on this issue. All right, counsel, there's a ruling under advisement. The court's going to review some previous research and rulings I've made in the case to determine this, so this will be the time we'll use for our mid-afternoon break. We are going to go till 3:30 today, so we'll try to keep this break to around 15 to 20 minutes to allow the jurors a break as well, and then we'll come back on the record with additional questioning. So everyone please rise for the jury.
All right.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.
There is much more to come. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss a minute of our coverage. Get an ad-free version of it when you sign up through Apple Podcasts right now as a premium subscriber. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.